This is the December 16 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He is also in Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org. Ellen Dearden, what's on your list of things that we ought to talk about for the day?
Well, I think my very first question from a lot of clients has been, what's corn basis going to do, and where's the demand going to come from, and does that have implications all the way into 2023? The other thing I'd like to talk about, I think, is let's talk a little bit about crude and where that's going.
I think we should start with crude oil. We'll come back to basis and demand in a moment. What are your thoughts?
Well, it looks to me like we're in a rather broad trading range with about $70 on the downside and about $90 on the upside. But there's an awful lot of fellas who are worried about buying diesel and or gasoline needs going way out into summer. And I'm not so sure that tying up capital with an inventory of gasoline is all that important to do right now. Diesel may be a little different story. We've not seen diesel prices come down much. We've seen gasoline prices come down, but diesel prices really have stayed pretty elevated and well above a year ago. But crude oil just looks like it's in kind of a sideways mode, with dips being bought in that $70 range.
Do we know why diesel prices have remained so high? Is it simply demand?
It's demand, and we're sending a lot of diesel out of the U.S. To Europe. So that has created a, quote, shortage within the U.S. Talking to my East Coast friends, they're saying that diesel for truckers is really in very short supply and at times nearly impossible to get. That's not been the case in the Midwest, but the prices remained elevated.
Do you suggest that producers go ahead and lock in diesel and have it delivered?
I would say yes on the diesel, at least through spring needs, but I wouldn't extend that all the way into next summer, which is where the questions that I've been fielding seem to want to get that much bought.
And this is a time that you think that that should happen, that we are now at a price that, while high, is worthwhile?
Yeah, I would think so. The other thing I would point out for people in Illinois, that at the pump prices, and this is not for farm fuel, but regular gasoline at the pump prices, we'll see a big jump in the state tax come January 1. So people who fill tanks for non-farm use, be aware, I think the increase is 13 cents a gallon.
So that is important to get done prior to the end of the year. Otherwise, there will be a tax on those gallons.
Yes, I would say so. Particularly, that's only going to work if it is non-farm use gasoline.
Right. So if you've got a tank that you pull from yourself for regular consumer use, the tax is going to be put on those gallons starting January the 1st, not on the gallons that would be used on the farm. Now let's turn your attention to the corn basis and demand. Can you start with demand and the USDA's change in the export market of 75 million bushels lower in this last month?
Well, I think from what we know right now, that's probably a start. And we would continue to see exports probably work lower in upcoming months. But USDA was pretty slow about making that change and waited until December to do it, even though export bookings are about half of what they were at this time a year ago. What I do see is demand at the Gulf for beans overtaking demand at the Gulf for corn. So from this area, there are some pushes on the Illinois and the Mississippi River for beans, but nothing for corn. So that says to me that the book for corn via barge is not there. Now, rail corn is moving, but that's going either to feedlots or ethanol plants or whatever. And I think the big elephant in the room is that ethanol has really carried the demand on corn all fall, and now ethanol margins are just not very good. And I would anticipate that we will see some ethanol plants either go to hot idle or just continue to ratchet down their grind. We see that in the Peoria area right now from some of the big processors, and it's not that they're shut down, but they're just slowing their intake. And slowing the intake comes from wider basis. The basis that had been, 30 over the March is, just barely over right now. We still have, Todd, we still have good basis overall for corn, but it's just not as good as it was a few weeks ago, particularly into the processors.
I'll come back to the basis in just a second, but I would like to stay with demand. Livestock sector, of course, in the United States, the largest sector, consuming corn, bean meal as well, and ethanol closely at a second, of course. How is the livestock sector holding up as it relates to demand for corn?
Well, cattle numbers are falling, carcass weights are dropping, and that I think that is a reflection just recently of high corn prices and or meal prices. But a sector that I really like to talk a little bit about and is not one that we in Illinois spend a lot of time talking about, and that's for birds, both chickens and turkeys. We've seen avian flu again rear its ugly head, and I work with some clients in the northwest corner of Iowa that have had a big laying, chicken laying operation go down, and from the time that they euthanize chickens, and these are egg layers, euthanize them, come in and clean the buildings out, it is nearly 60 days until they need corn again. Now, the people that I work with have corn contracted for December delivery, and obviously the laying facilities are not taking in corn. Well, these are I'm talking about facilities that have a million or a million and a half layers. So that's really put a hole in demand in that northwest Iowa, northeast Nebraska corner for laying hens. But also let's add on some turkeys. And we've seen turkey operations both in the southwest corner of Minnesota and the northwest corner of Iowa lose turkeys from the same disease. So it'll take a while. I noticed I was at the grocery store the other day, and just regular old eggs at the grocery store were over $4 a dozen. And my neighbors who have chickens say it still costs them about $4 a dozen to produce a dozen eggs anymore. And part of that, of course, is the container that those eggs go in. Not just the feed costs, but their feed costs are up tremendously.
So how much of an impact, because if I remember correctly, the poultry sector is the largest consuming portion of livestock demand for corn. How much of an impact do you suppose this will have?
Well, it depends on whether one round out and clean up and then put another round in, whether that stays healthy. Because this avian flu seems to show up and hang on for several months at a time. So I would anticipate that we probably cut 20 million bushels at least off livestock demand from turkeys and chickens over the last 30 or 40 days.
And the USDA, of course, had warned about this as early, I think. I was on a conference with Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack. I believe very early April, it may have been in late March of last year, because it had come in avian influenza through the wild bird migrations at that point. And they suggested it could be really problematic by the time we got to the fall and early winter. I suppose that's the case, and we'll see how that plays out. Other things, then, related to this. Bases in that area, have you seen, can you see that drop in bases in that area with respect to the amount of feed that is needed?
Yes, although they're, you know, you're not too far from cattle feeding operations that use a lot of corn as well. But yes, you're seeing the basis hasn't fallen apart, but we are seeing 10 cents weaker than we were a month ago because of this chicken, particularly the layers and the turkey situation in that northwest Iowa portion. Basis is still very good there, however, but I anticipate we're starting to see also in that area some pullback of ethanol demand.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about basis in that area in general, in that northwestern corner of Iowa, southwestern corner of Minnesota, because they have, I think, enough rail lines that probably demand has come from the feedlots in Colorado, which are serviced in part by some of that area, I believe maybe some of Nebraska as well, but also have a very serious drought out west and have to draw corn from someplace, probably holding the basis just a bit stronger. But if you pull ethanol out of the mix, things will change pretty dramatically, I would think, fast.
I would think so, too. In talking with elevator clients that I work with, they are sending trains to the southwest with corn, and their typical places that they would serve would be local feedlots and ethanol plants, with the ethanol going west by rail into California. Right now, they don't even have trains running, though, Todd. It's, you know, with the weather.
Right. The snow and the ice and that big storm has slowed that down. When you look at basis maps, sometimes you can see, especially if there is drought in the west, basis influence to the Mississippi River, and then a drop across to the east of the Mississippi River, and another drop again once you get to the east of the Illinois River. Is that the case at this point?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it hasn't changed all that much. But what I notice is the ethanol plants that have been built over the last decade, the big vacuum in prices and basis being very weak in that western part of Iowa, that's not the case anymore. That their basis in that area is very comparable to what we see in the Peoria, Pekin area. So that's changed. I think it's interesting that the flow of stuff, the normal flow of stuff, which is from the middle part of Illinois going south or into the rail market in the southeast or south into the Gulf market, you know, that seems to be skewed this year.
In what way?
The stuff is going to the southwest via rail as much as possible.
And more so than it normally would, because it would all oftentimes go to Hereford, Texas, and other places as well, and in Kansas to the feedlots.
Well, they go to Hereford, Texas, and Kansas feedlots out of western Iowa typically, but not out of western Illinois. So, you know, they're pulling from further east. Those feedlots are pulling from further east to be able to get stuff.
Does that mean there's a strategy that producers in Illinois can use?
I think they need to be checking all their markets instead of saying, well, I'm going to commit bushels to one place or another, that they need to be looking at basis in a little wider circle and figure that they may really do well going to a rail market that's 60 miles away rather than to a river market that's 10 miles or 15 miles away.
Any final notes for us today?
I think that you need to be very aware that spreaders have really overtaken the commodities markets, both in the grains and livestock. If you watch the tail end of every day, you see some spread activity come in, whether it's buying corn and selling wheat or buying bean meal and selling bean oil. Those spreaders show up, and you just need to be aware that the very tail end of trade is going to see some wild things.
So if you have positions on, be aware of that and try to manage the risk or just to hold through it.
I think you hold through it. I think you figure that the next day they're going to, the spreaders will go in and unwind those spreads.
And don't get scared by the volatility. Anything else before I let you go?
No, I don't think so. Thanks, Todd.
Hey, thank you too, Ellen. Ellen Dearden is with AgriView. She's in Morton, Illinois. Chip Nellinger is also in Morton, Illinois. He's at Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Thanks, Chip, for joining us today too. Do you have a list of items we ought to discuss?
Yeah, well, I think coming into the holiday time frame, we need to discuss, the South American weather situation. It's a little bit uncertain and dry in areas down there. That's going to really drive things into the end of the year and could get a little volatile in holiday weather. Outside markets are an influence. And demand questions into the new year are really what's going to, drive things. So all three of those combined can produce some continuing volatile trade.
Well, let's start with the holiday trade. Light trade generally means there is volatility. I suppose that means there's both opportunity and risk. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, as you mentioned, when the volume shrinks at the holidays, when someone wants to get into or out of a big position, aka the funds, you can have big moves in one direction or another. We're also coming into the end of a month, end of a quarter, end of a year. And so into all this light volume comes the potential for the funds to, either even up, take some profits on some positions. It could really move things and, kind of be outside of what a normal move you would expect given the fundamentals. So that is something we have to be on alert for. However, I think the backdrop of this is still going to be, the South American weather situation. So even though it's kind of cold and dreary and, getting winter time frame here, we really are in a full-blown weather market because of the South American situation.
Well, that would be out of Argentina to the upside risk and Brazil to the downside risk, because one looks really good and one looks really, really poor. Is Argentina playing a bigger role this time around at the moment?
Well, I mean, I think that's going to be the battle. It's a little bit like we faced here in the United States this year, with the Eastern Corn Belt being really good and the Western Corn Belt really struggling with drought conditions. So, it's going to be a case of how much of a shortfall is there in Argentina versus how much above average are they in Brazil. The thing that's a little bit concerning to me is that southern tier of states in Brazil is starting to dry out a little bit as well. Now, I don't think they're as dire as what Argentina is, but if that's a continuing trend into January, that southern portion of Brazil, southern third, say, produces a huge amount of agricultural production and bean production there. So, I think it's something we need to watch. But as you mentioned, at least two-thirds of Brazil right now looks probably as good as they ever have, and awesome start. But that's going to be kind of the tipping point here is can you get some rain in those southern third of Brazil growing areas into January? And if so, I think the market assumption is going to be that the production excess in Brazil will be more than enough to offset the shortfall in Argentina. But in my opinion, it's those southern growing areas of Brazil over the next 3 or 4 weeks that really matters.
Is it an opportunity for producers to finish out pricing soybeans in the United States? Should that come to fruition, meaning that there is a futures problem with expected drought and then, of course, settled out by total production being bigger than expected in the northern growing regions?
Yeah, and I'm not so sure that we're kind of not at a place here that is an opportunity to make some catch-up sales. We have, at least here in the Eastern Corn Belt and even west of the Mississippi, historically strong basis levels for beans. So in a lot of areas, they're close to or above $15. I think that's a good place to get some catch-up sales made. And if you would push the futures north of 15, either going into the last couple weeks of this year or the first half of January on a weather scare down in South America, I think that does offer a really good spot to clean house. If you want to bet or gamble on additional weather problems in Brazil or South America, buy some calls, buy some call spreads. I think also, we've kind of touched this $14 area in November 23 beans multiple times, a half a dozen times over the last 3 months, seems to cap us but that's really profitable right now as well. As you look at the 23, I think that's a potential, action area, I guess, if you want to call it that. The producers need to kind of watch as far as the 23 crop, and beans are right there in the mix, kind of arguing that maybe you pick up some acres unless you can push December corn back north of $6. I think we've got an acreage battle building, and right now, in my mind, at least in the areas outside of the main portions of the Corn Belt, beans win right now, arguably on paper, but, obviously we've got a long time to go before we're planting the crop this spring.
U.S. EPA, when it announced its RVOs, the Renewable Volume Obligations, did not do what the trade expected, which was to increase those, as it's related to advanced biofuels, particularly for renewable diesel. There are a lot of planned plants coming online, are expected to come online in the next 2 years. Farmers are really, I think, fairly bullish about the price of soybeans. Certainly the trade has been. How does that play into your thinking?
Yeah, well, I think there's a psychological aspect to this as well. Number one, just commenting quickly on an EPA decision, very frustrating, that we just continually seem to fight the EPA on some of these decisions. And, they kind of take a law and, bend it to their will to, shoot ag in the foot at times. So a little bit frustrating there. But there, I think more importantly, to your point, there's kind of been a psychological, makeup in farmers that the market has put on us, and myself included, where any forward contract you've made in the past, probably going on 3 years, you didn't like, because eventually somewhere down the road, the market rallied into new highs and, things were great and you could sell at a higher level. And I think that we've kind of, myself included, got into this mindset that, we can be a little bit patient. If the market breaks a little bit here, it's going to come back. And unfortunately, if South America does come up with a big production number and we swing the pendulum back the other way from tightening stocks in the world and strong demand from China to now increasing stocks and some questions about China's demand going forward, then, one of these days we're going to wake up and prices won't come back. And that's where the pain comes in. That's why I think going back, you really have to look at these $15 levels or thereabouts as maybe opportunities to catch up some sales on the 22, and the $14 level or close to it on 23 is an area to at least get a start and make some profitable sales out there. Not saying you got to sell 2/3 of your crop, but at least get a start. And if you're early and beans go a lot higher, it's going to drag corn along with it, and net-net, you're going to have the gross revenue that you need on your farm.
U.S. Farmers raised a short corn crop this year that's reflected in the USDA numbers, though they did raise the ending stocks figure by 75 million bushels, which they took out of the export market the last time around in the month of December. Farmers have closed the bin door. Prices remain high for corn. What are your expectations?
Yeah, I think we remain in a choppy market in here. It seems like as you push cash corn levels up closer to $7, it kind of stimulates some farmer selling. And as you break, 20, 30 cents below that, you kind of uncover some commercial buying. So I think we continue in a range in here. The breaks being bought, we still have a tight stock situation, at least for the foreseeable future, and a logistics situation from the Eastern Corn Belt, railed and shipped to those southern plains, the panhandle and those areas, were hit so hard with drought and really struggling getting, feedstock right now for cattle. So I expect a range to continue. I do think that the big concern is the demand going forward. We have seen a couple nice rebounds the last couple of weeks and some, fairly healthy, not just knock your socks off, but at least some increasing, weekly sales numbers. I think we need to kind of continue that trend into January and February. But I think more of a range. Obviously, the January crop report is going to dictate some of that as well, as we kind of get a glimpse of what the final yields are and what, that final acreage number is going to be as well. And then the market can kind of get a little better feel for what the 23, the new crop situation, looks like as well.
Does having a range-bound trade mean that farmers can wait till the top of the range, know what it is, and simply market into that? And how do they do that if that's the case?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it means. In my mind, what it means is you put some offers in above the market that you're comfortable with. I think it's going to be hard to push much north of, you know, a $7 cash corn type of a number, like the Decatur market and maybe some of these hotter processor markets. But generally speaking, I think you pick a number on the cash side that you're happy with, up close to seven. Certainly, if we push above seven into the middle or end of January, I think you have to continue to reward that as well. And, you know, then maybe not panic quite as much unless something changes. Now, I say that with a grain of salt, because if we come in here, you know, next week or the first week or two of January, and all of a sudden the weather pattern changes in Argentina, and they get rain, southern Brazil gets rain, you know, that's a different story. But with the uncertainty in the weather situation right now, I think we're in a range, and you put offers in and reward the rallies when you see them, because there's a lot of unpriced inventory out there kind of capping the rallies in corn.
You've talked throughout our conversation a little bit about the 2023 growing season for both corn and soybeans and the marketing year. How do you set your producers up to manage risk?
Well, I think first and foremost, get a really good handle on the numbers. We've been crunching some numbers. Just preliminarily, you know, it's going to be the most expensive crop ever to put out from a cost basis standpoint. And, you know, probably $1,100 an acre on corn and, you know, probably upwards of $750, maybe knocking the door $800 on the beans. So first and foremost, get a handle on what your costs are. That will kind of, I think, you know, refocus on, you know, what is profitable. I think we have to reset our expectations just a little bit as well, meaning, you know, I talked a little bit about this earlier. The last two or three years, we've had just massive profitability, you know, from both price and yield. And I think it's kind of clouded our judgment a little bit in some respects, where don't expect $300-$400 an acre profit, you know, maybe get back to more of a normal type, you know, projection and you know, expectation on profit levels in here. So I think first and foremost, Todd, you crunch the numbers, get a really accurate snapshot of where you're at, what it costs to put out an acre of corn and an acre of beans. And I think what you'll find is that, you know, it doesn't take much of a push, especially here in the Eastern Corn Belt, north of $6 on December futures. And we're kind of flirting right around there. And you're looking at profitable levels, and the beans at 14 or above, if we get that chance, really have some profitability, you know, embedded in those levels too.
Do you use one crop to offset the other? Meaning, because if you think about marketing the farm as a whole, should you use soybeans more often to offset costs than corn in pre-sales, or the other way around?
Well, I don't typically think like that necessarily, but where my mindset is from the 23 is a little bit like we talked earlier. You know, I'm more willing from a standpoint of just looking at where prices are right now, corn bean ratio standpoint, I'm more willing to sell this $14 area on beans because it's profitable. And in my estimation, on the fringes, what I'm going to call the fringes outside of the I states, beans have an argument to pick up some acres. So I'm going to be patient under $6 on corn. I'm going to be a willing seller on beans, you know, at 14. And if I'm early on the beans and they rally significantly, just from a ratio standpoint ahead of planting, it's going to pull the corn up, and net, then I'm going to have a chance to sell corn at profitable level, a more profitable level, and my whole farm revenue stays good. So I don't know about offsetting one with the other, but I guess my mindset is, as we sit today, I'm more willing to be a little more aggressive on new crop beans, be patient on corn. And if I'm early on the beans, then my net revenue still works out in the end, and it's going higher if I happen to be a dollar early in making some sales in beans.
Any final word for us today?
Well, happy holidays to everyone, obviously. Merry Christmas. It's been an interesting year, to say the least. So I think, again, batten down the hatches, get ready for volatility, get ready for tightening, you know, profit margins in here. But that doesn't mean there's not going to be opportunities. So happy holidays, and hope everyone has a good Christmas and New Year's.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org or search it out in your favorite podcast application. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing and Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. Both are in Morton, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.